9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring today. Robert Half is here to help. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
China's biggest property developer narrowly avoids default, plus how battery recycling is becoming the hottest trade and why the U.S. economy continues to strengthen.
So if you had told economists a year or two ago 30-year mortgage rates in the U.S. were going to go to 7%, but the housing market really wasn't going to take much of a hit from it, people would have been very surprised. Nevertheless, that's what has happened.
It's Tuesday, September 5th. I'm Sandra Kilhoff for The Wall Street Journal, and here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. We begin in China, where the embattled property giant Country Garden has narrowly avoided default. The developer made two overdue bond coupon payments shortly before the end of a 30-day grace period. We're reporting that the interest payments totaling $22.5 million on U.S. dollar bonds had a combined face value of $1 billion. The financial struggles of Country Garden come amid a significant downturn in China's property market, and investors are still pessimistic about the developer's ability to repay its debt. On the other hand, China's EV and battery manufacturers are continuing to grow and attract investment. Sovereign wealth funds, foreign partners, and top engineers are all betting on Chinese suppliers and makers of electric vehicles, with automakers securing funding from global companies like Volkswagen and Intel. WSJ technology reporter Lisa Lin says China's EV sector is seeing rapid expansion.
Venture capital and private equity that went into the electric vehicle and related space last year hit $15 billion. And that's a record for the sector. And it's also come as venture capital flows in general into China has been very depressed because China's economy was really badly hit last year by zero COVID. And when you have all this investment coming in, you know, there's a lot of excitement in the space. Consumers are also willing to try out the cars, and there's a long-term idea of moving towards cleaner energy vehicles anyway, plus targets set by the Chinese government that by a certain point, the bulk of the cars sold to Chinese vehicles have to be electric. So all this is really spurring the rapid growth of the sector.
And that growth really is a bright spot in China's slowing economy, says Lisa.
The EV sector is very important for two reasons. Firstly, for anyone buying a car is a huge big ticket item, and car buying does spur spending in the economy overall. And secondly, because car manufacturing is the bedrock of most of the country's manufacturing, it hires a ton of people and attracts a ton of investment as well. So the success and the continued success of the EV sector is integral for China to keep up economic growth this year.
In the U.S., investors are rushing to back clean energy startups set to benefit from the Inflation Reduction Act. We're exclusively reporting that battery recycling startup Ascend Elements has raised $460 million in a financing round that included decarbonization partners mining giant BHP and investment stalwart PIMCO. The funding round values the company at roughly $1.5 billion. Last week, rival recycling startup Redwood Materials raised $1 billion in a funding round that included Goldman Sachs. Climate finance reporter Amrit Ramkumar says the investments are among the largest for clean energy startups this year.
These companies are expected to profit as more battery factories come online across the U.S. and eventually when lots of people have to recycle their used electric car batteries. There are many challenges still here for investors and these companies that really have to scale up operations now. Battery recycling companies are sort of in this weird period where they need to take in the scrap material from gigafactories across the U.S., and they are benefiting a lot from last year's climate law known as the Inflation Reduction Act. Long term, many investors are bullish on battery recycling because of the huge amount of batteries that are now being built and consumed in electric cars and for storing renewable power. Recycling and the processing of battery materials are seen as vital industries for the U.S. to expand to push back against China's industry dominance.
Coming up, the U.S. economy continues to go from strength to strength, but with growth in Europe and China sputtering, can it remain resilient? More on that after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Plus, save time by completing security questionnaires with Vanta AI. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ. That's VANTA.com/WSJ.
For more than a year, the U.S. economy has defied forecasts of its imminent demise. And while Friday's jobs data revealed that hiring is finally slowing, wage growth still remains stubbornly high. But according to our chief economics correspondent, Nick Timiraos, there are reasons to think the U.S. economy won't remain immune to the effects of higher interest rates and slowing growth. Nick, thank you for joining me today. You write that there are three very good reasons why U.S. growth won't falter. The first one harks back to the pandemic and how the government responded to it. Explain your thinking here.
Sure. So to step back, the Fed has raised interest rates a lot, more than 5 percentage points. And so a lot of people are scratching their heads saying, well, why hasn't this slowed the economy more? And one of the reasons, as you note, is that we showered households and businesses with cash in 2020 when the pandemic hit, and interest rates were cut and held at ultra low levels. And that means that homeowners were able to refinance their mortgages, businesses were able to extend their debt and lock in very low interest rates. And so even though interest rates have gone up a lot since the beginning of 22, a lot of people haven't really felt it yet. So the pandemic and the policy response have in some ways fortified the private sector against the effort now to slow things down by raising interest rates.
And speaking of policy responses, one of the things you say also has played a real important part is fiscal spending by the U.S. government.
Right. So after the initial fiscal spending, including $2 trillion in March 2021 by the Biden administration, the White House and Congress passed other spending bills for infrastructure, for investment in semiconductor chip production, and the Inflation Reduction Act, which had spending on green energy, new technology. All of that is now coursing its way through the economy at a time when a lot of economists expected investment spending to pull back. Well, you're seeing a different response here from government spending, which is contributing to stronger demand. Cities and states are spending money. That's completely different from the recovery after the global financial crisis in 2008, when you had states and localities pulling back. So that's another reason why the economy has performed better this year than a lot of economists expected.
And one of the things we saw during the pandemic, as well as in the aftermath, was shortages. You're talking about how everything from cars to workers is really actually that third factor, the third cog in the U.S. growth machine. How does that work?
So if you think about the pandemic, we disrupted a lot of normal spending patterns. We also disrupted the ability to produce goods. So car production fell in 2020. And car demand went way up in 2021 when people had money to spend. So that's why we had a lot of increases in prices. You'd normally expect when the Fed raises interest rates to see demand for interest rate sensitive products. Cars, people finance those, so they're sensitive to higher borrowing costs. But there's been so much pent up demand that it's just taken longer for interest rate increases to slow down car production. The same things you could point to in the housing market, where there's just not a lot of homes for sale. More people have gone out and purchased new homes, so the new home construction hasn't taken a big hit. And then finally, you're seeing it in the labor market, where this was the summer where everybody was spending money on services, going to hotels, concerts, recreation. And services, especially leisure and hospitality, is very labor intensive. You have to employ a lot of people to sell those services. And so the labor market has held up so much better than economists anticipated because of that services sector consumption.
Okay, so the U.S. economy clearly still doing really well, as you've laid out, Nick. However, the world doesn't seem to be doing as well. There's talk of Europe being on the cusp of recession. You've got China facing deflation. Can the U.S. really remain immune when you've got these big macroeconomic trends happening?
Well, if you were to have a serious downturn in Europe or in China, then that would definitely have an effect on the U.S. And that was an expectation a year ago, is that the winter was just going to crush Europe. And we didn't see that happen. But yes, there's a risk from global growth slowdown or from shocks abroad. There's also a risk, though, that you see energy prices go higher, and that could crimp consumer spending. That could also lead to higher interest rates if the Fed was concerned that another big increase in oil prices was going to lead to a new round of inflation. And so there's a risk, of course, from slower global growth, but there's also a risk that stronger U.S. growth keeps the Fed pushing interest rates higher, and eventually that could cause something to break in the U.S. economy that leads to a recession.
Nick Timiraos is the Wall Street Journal's chief economic correspondent. Nick, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is back in the headlines this morning after U.S. officials said he will travel to Russia soon to meet with President Vladimir Putin. It's the latest sign that negotiations between the two countries are accelerating over ammunition Moscow is seeking for its war in Ukraine. The trip would be unusual for the North Korean leader, who rarely travels abroad. The planned meeting between Kim and Putin was earlier reported by the New York Times, which said Kim would likely travel by armored train to meet Putin next week in Vladivostok, on Russia's eastern coast. Turning to Washington now, where Congress is returning following the summer recess. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy both say they have a clear roadmap to avoid a government shutdown, involving a short-term deal to keep the government running. But WSJ Congress reporter Lindsay Wise says lawmakers will almost certainly need an extension to their September 30th deadline amid sharp disagreements over next year's spending levels.
There definitely will be an effort by leadership on both sides to try and have what's called a continuing resolution to continue government funding levels at their current level while they try and work out a deal. So if they aren't able to pass these appropriations bills or some of these other policy bills by the end of the month, we may see Congress give themselves a few more weeks, extend their deadline, but they still have to find the votes to do that. And we don't know for sure, especially in the House, if they'll be able to do that, where conservatives have said they are reluctant to support even a continuing resolution if McCarthy doesn't agree to some of their policy demands and some of their funding demands.
A new poll by the Wall Street Journal has revealed that voters think President Biden is too old to run for re-election. The survey also gave him low marks for handling the economy. Only 39% of U.S. voters hold a favorable view of Biden, while in a separate question, 57% said they disapprove of how he is handling his job. WSJ White House reporter Sabrina Siddiqui says the poll also revealed some important details about Biden's ability to win over former President Donald Trump in a potential rematch of the 2020 election.
The race is statistically tied, but what's new in this poll is that President Biden is losing ground with independents. And that's going to be a real problem for him, because independents were crucial to his victory over Trump in 2020, and he will really need independents to break in his favor. The economy continues to be a big part of that, and this ongoing challenge that the message that Biden is selling about the economic recovery and his handling of the economy and job creation through his legislative accomplishments, voters aren't buying it, or they're just not feeling it yet.
And First Lady Jill Biden has tested positive for COVID-19 and is experiencing mild symptoms. According to the White House, President Biden tested negative on Monday evening, but will test again at a regular cadence this week. There has been a summer bump in COVID-19 cases, hospitalizations, and deaths. Test positivity rates have been increasing for the past couple of months, rising to 14.9% for the week ended August 26, compared with just 4% in June. And finally, the Great American Road Trip has long been powered by gasoline. But what if you're trying to travel long distance in an electric car? Range anxiety, the fear of being stranded without a charger, is still a big issue in the EV market. So now, some automakers are trying to remedy that with bigger batteries and super-efficient engineering to squeeze every last watt from their vehicles. Wall Street Journal tech columnist Christopher Mims recently tested out an ultra-long-range EV. He told the Future of Everything podcast that it's opening up new ways of thinking about driving and that range isn't everything.
We're getting close to crossing a barrier where an EV costs less than a gasoline vehicle before you even calculate the total cost of ownership. The future is about a diverse range of EVs. you know, low range city EVs, plug-in hybrids, they're still going to be relevant for many decades. And then, yeah, there are going to be these really long range EVs, which are going to stay more in the range of luxury.
You can learn more about Christopher's road trip and the strength of long-range EVs on the future of everything, wherever you get your podcasts. And that's What's News for Tuesday morning. Today's show was produced by Mohsen Ali and Kate Bullivant. And I'm Sandra Kilhoff for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back tonight with a new show. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.